Thank you for joining me for another week of our 4.5-year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We begin today in 2 Samuel chapter number 3, where we are looking at the civil war that has broken out in earnest between the kingdom of David, who is king over Judea, and the kingdom of Ishbaal, the surviving son of Saul, whom Abner has put on the throne over all of Israel. Now, Abner has done this on the eastern side of the Jordan at a place called Mahanaim, which is a stronghold which I believe he judged to be a safe zone to evacuate the kingdom to once Saul was dead and there were probably still marauding bands of Philistines and a concern over those that had defected to the side of David. Now, last time we were together, we saw that both sides were present at Gibeon, where the tabernacle is located. Now, I suspect that it was at the time of the Feast of Tabernacles, not long after the battle that ended up with the death of King Saul. And it was suggested that 12 young men from each side fight it out. I think it was an idea of fighting it out on behalf of both sides. Kind of let God sort it out. But it ended up with a slaughter. 24 Israelis dead, 12 on each side. And then it spread into a battle. And the Judeans had the upper hand. And the Israelis, under the command of Abner, were retreating eastward back to the Jordan Valley, heading back to Mahanaim. And one of David's nephews, not too far from his age, because apparently these are the sons of his much older sister, one of David's nephews was trying to chase down Abner during the retreat. And Abner kept warning him off, and he would not. And finally, Abner, I think, hoping to just put him down for a bit, give himself a little bit chance to get farther ahead, tried to hit him in the solar plexus, that area just right below the rib cage at the center of the abdomen. But his spear butt shattered and skewered the young man and killed him. And only because of the oncoming of night did Joab call off the pursuit, and Abner and the other Israelis went back to Mahanaim. But Joab is angry, and so is his brother Abishai because of the death of their little brother Asahel. And that will not be forgotten. And so I just wanted to review that real quick at the beginning of our lesson today so that we keep it clearly in mind that they bear a huge grudge against Abner of the house of Benjamin. Chapter number 3. There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. Long is a relative term. We're talking about 2 years almost. From sometime in 1017 BC, according to my calculations, right up to the very beginning of 1015 BC. Now the rest of the verse says, "And David grew stronger and stronger, while the house of Saul became weaker and weaker." And the way that's happening is more and more of the Israelis are throwing their support behind David because of their conviction that he is the hero of Israel and he is the choice of God to become the next king. Regardless of the traditional Middle Eastern approach of the oldest son of the last king becoming the next king. I'm going to skip over the next few verses because it lists the sons that are born to David and his wives, first at Hebron, where his current kingdom is headquartered, and then later at Jerusalem. We'll come back and talk about these family trees later. Let's suffice it to say that as this civil war is going on, it's highly likely that David's wives are pregnant, or possibly one of them may have already had their child there at Hebron. Verse number six. While there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul. Now, that's not surprising. He's been Saul's right-hand man throughout the entirety of Saul's reign, about 20 years worth. He's been the commander, the general of the United Israeli Army during that time. And now he's the power behind the throne. He's the one that insisted that the surviving son of Saul, Ishbaal by name, be crowned the new king of United Israel and that he be protected there in that safe zone in Mahanaim. But something sours between Abner and Ishbaal. Verse number seven. Now Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. Saul had multiple wives and also some secondary wives. Now, what's the difference? Well, these wives are typically taken not out of love, not out of romance, but out of treaties, out of business arrangements or governmental arrangements. And when those marriage agreements are made, there are certain levels of responsibility and rights that are designated for the wives and concubines. Typically, the wives had a lot more rights. One of the most important, more than likely, was that they had a right to some sort of child with the king. And that child would be in line for the throne. Secondary wives, maybe because of business agreements and things like that, may not have had that right of children being counted in the line of ascension to the throne. So here we have a concubine named Rizpah that Saul has left behind as technically a widow. And evidently, Abner and Rizpah have some sort of personal relationship. Now, I'm going to give you my opinion here based on the study of the text that I've already done. I don't think it was a sexual relationship. I think it was a friendship. But here's the problem. In the Middle East, at this time, to have a sexual relationship with the widow of a king was effectively an assertion that I'm taking over the business arrangements, the social arrangements, the national arrangements of the king. In effect, I want to be the one that takes over all of those treaties, those business deals, those arrangements. I want to be the next king. So Ishbosheth, or as I think his circumcision name was, Ishbaal. Maybe I better explain that again. Bosheth in Hebrew means shame. And Baal was a borrowed word in the time of David and Saul from the Canaanite language. And it basically meant Lord. It was a synonym for the Hebrew word Adonai. So the Israelis of this time period used Baal as a substitution for the divine name. So Ishbaal, the original name of this man, meant man of the Lord, man of he who is. But later copyists amongst the Israelis could not bring themselves to use the name of the thunder and lightning god of the Canaanites, which in their time period was blasphemously being used in worship of that pagan deity. So they would substitute words that showed their contempt for the name of that deity. So Ishbosheth, man of shame. But his original name, Ishbaal, is the one that I prefer us to keep hearing here. So Ishbaal said to Abner, "Why have you gone into my father's concubine?" So he accused Abner of having a sexual relationship with the widow of Saul. And this is about 2 years into Ishbaal's kingdom. It is not just simply an accusation of an inappropriate sexual relationship. It's an accusation of, you're trying to take over the kingdom, aren't you? Verse number 8. Abner was very angry over the words of Ishbaal. And his wording, I think, indicates that he is innocent of the sexual affair that he's being accused of, and most definitely innocent of trying to seize power of the kingdom. After all, he's bent over backwards to try to get Ishbaal on the throne and safe and secure as the king over United Israel, even in opposition to a very popular man named David. So listen to his words and hear the fury at being accused as he was. "Am I a dog's head of Judah?" So, am I Judah's puppy? "To this day I kept showing steadfast love to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and I have not given you into the hand of David." So, he says, what do you think I am? Do you think I'm a sellout to David? I have been honest and supportive of your father first, and now of you and all of his relatives, all of his supporters. I could have turned you over to David at any time, but I didn't do it. Now listen to the last phrase. "And yet you charge me today with a fault concerning a woman. How dare you accuse me of something that I've not done." Verse number 9. "God do so to Abner and more also, if I do not accomplish for David what he who has sworn to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan to Beersheba." So it would appear to me there's a lot more bubbling under the surface here. Remember, the war's been going on for a couple of years. And while Abner is trying to do his best to keep the kingdom in the hands of Ishbaal, it's still slipping away. And so he's frustrated by that. He's had reports, clearly, that it's been prophesied that David is supposed to be the next king of Israel, that he was anointed by Samuel years ago. That stuff's starting to come out now. And so this was, I suppose, the straw that broke the camel's back for him to keep trying to fight against what must be God's will, that David should be the king over united Israel. And the descriptor here is one that shows up quite a bit in Scripture. From Dan, way up in the north, north of the Sea of Galilee, about a day's travel, all the way down to Beersheba, which is about a day's travel south of Hebron. So the full extent of the promised land. So he swears before God that he will now make arrangements for David to become the king of united Israel. Verse 11, and Ishbaal could not answer Abner another word because he feared him. Abner is very powerful. He's the longtime general of the United Israeli Army. So he's got a lot of support. He's at least a couple of decades older than Ishbaal, who's in his early 40s, and lots of experience. So he is not someone to be trifled with. So Ishbaal keeps his mouth shut and realizes that he has brought this on himself. Verse 12, Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, to whom does the land belong? Make your covenant with me. Behold, my hand shall be with you to bring over all Israel to you. So he lets David know, my intention is to now be a supporter of yours, and I will work at a peaceful resolution to this civil war and the peaceful transfer of full power from Ishbaal to you. Verse 13, and he said, good, I will make a covenant with you. So David agrees. He says, I am glad to hear that you're on board with that. But one thing I require of you, that is, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face. Now, Michal and David were married probably a dozen or more years earlier, when David was probably in his later teens. Maybe he was around 20, and right now he's in his early 30s. He was 30 when he became king about 2 years ago. So he insists that his original wife, the daughter of Saul, be restored back as his wife. Now that's a problem, because when David escaped that last time with Michal's assistance, and that's now been almost 4 years ago on our time scale, King Saul forcibly divorced Michal from David because David was now an outlaw, and he had a hit order put out for him by Saul's authorities. So he had no intention of allowing David to remain married to his daughter. So he forcibly divorced her from David and remarried her to someone else. And that marriage has lasted for almost 4 years now. And this is difficult. There's a lot of emotions that are going to be involved in this. And I'll talk about it, particularly on a future occasion when we discuss Michal's attitude toward David. David never rescued her, and she may have bore a grudge toward him for doing that. He also married a couple of other women by now, he might have been married to three or four women. And so she is not happy about him going forward with his life with others. There's also this issue. And I'm going to just plant this thought in your head. David and Michal never had any children together. In the dozen or so years that they'd been married, never had any children. Now, that is not a physical issue with David, clearly, because David now has other wives that are pregnant and possibly have already delivered children. So Michal must not have been able to have children. And so she also is not going to be happy that David has kids with other wives. So keep that in the back of your mind as we push forward now. So he's already told Abner, you may not come into my presence until after I have Michal back as my wife. So David follows that up with a demand to Ishbaal, whom no doubt Abner has already talked to about this issue. David sent messengers to Ishbaal, Saul's son, saying, give me my wife Michal, for whom I paid the bridal price of 100 foreskins of the Philistines. And Ishbaal sent and took her from her husband, Paltiel, the son of Laish. Now notice that Ishbaal is going along with this demand made to Abner by David, that the only way Abner is going to be able to enter into negotiations to turn the kingdom over to David is by having Michal restored to David's home. So Ishbaal is actually cooperating in the procedures for turning the kingdom over to David. He seems to be resolved to that. Now, good for him, although it'll not be helpful later, good for him is that David has already sworn that he will not take any lethal action against the family of Saul. The common practice was when one family took over a kingdom from another family, they annihilated the original family to keep them from making any attempts to retake the throne. But David made promises to Jonathan that he would never do that. So Ishbaal is covered under that oath of David that if he will just cooperate, he can live peaceably in the kingdom of Israel for the rest of his life under David's leadership. So apparently Ishbaal has agreed with those terms. And so Ishbaal sent and took her from her husband Paltiel, the son of Laish. So this is the guy that Saul married her off to about 4 years ago. And now Ishbaal is divorcing her, his sister, from Paltiel and restoring the original marriage back to David. So it's really kind of a twisted sort of thing that's happening here. Verse 16, but her husband went with her, weeping after her all the way to Bahurim. So he is all torn up. I'm guessing she's all torn up because, as I keep stressing, they've been married for about 4 years now. It's the sort of strange emotions, I think, that are raised up when twisted circumstances happen. And the thing that I can best relate this to is I've seen stories, and sometimes they've been made into movies, of men who went off to war and they were reported killed in action, and their widows, after grieving over their loss, went on with their lives, got remarried, and then suddenly, a couple of years later, the supposed dead man turns up alive. He hadn't been killed in action. He'd been captured and kept incommunicado, could not reach out and let anybody know he was alive. And now he's back on the scene, and he would like to resume his old marriage with his wife, but unfortunately, she's already gone on and married another man and is in love with him. And wow, you can appreciate the conflict of emotions right there, right? So that's the best thing that I can kind of compare this with. And so this Paltiel travels with the escort party. Abner appears to be in charge of this. From Mahanaim, which is the royal safe zone on the east side of the Jordan, down into the Jordan Valley, probably down by Jericho, and then up the road that goes toward Jerusalem, and from there down to Hebron. And somewhere along that road, apparently in Benjamite territory, it seems, is this place called Bahurim. And it is there that Abner tells Paltiel, go, return. And then he returned. And so now Abner is ready to arrive at Hebron and make the arrangements to give the entire kingdom into the hands of David.